Hello, this is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1206 features two more stories from new Life Rattle writer, Sonia Dhaliwal. Sonia Dhaliwal was born in Mississauga in 1990. She spent her toddler years in Ada, Ohio, where her father attended pharmacy school. Next, her father's residency took the family to Sioux Lookout, a small town in northern Ontario. The family, now larger with the arrival of twin siblings, eventually returned to Mississauga, where Sonia's father opened up a pharmacy. Sonia attended elementary, middle, and high school in Mississauga until Ohio beckoned again. She spent 2 years and one academic quarter battling an intense pre-medical program in Ada before declaring herself confused. After soul-searching in India with her mum, backpacking around Europe with her best friends, and attempting and failing the MCAT, Sonia decided to give university another try, this time in biology and professional writing at UTM. Between classes and studying, Sonia loves to practice yoga, cuddle up with her dog, Tyson, and of course, writing her heart out. Last week we heard stories of our writer's youth. Tonight, we hear two new stories that masquerade as focusing on defeat and fear, but are actually stories of strength, persistence, and hope. Dhaliwal delivers this complexity of emotion with vignettes that are clear, insightful, and visually astute. You're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and please be advised, Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised. So let's listen now as Sonia Dhaliwal delivers her first story tonight, titled Republica Socialista Romania.
Republica Socialista Romania by Sonia Dhaliwal. Friday, March 18th, 1988. Adriana's thigh thumps against the underside of her desk as she twitches her foot. She glances to her left at her husband's empty office chair. Adriana and her husband were about to leave work for the night when the general manager, Delia, paged Adriana's husband into the main office an hour ago. He still hasn't returned. Adriana tidies her cluttered desktop while she waits for her husband. She shoves a thick stack of Computer Center of the Romanian Ministry of Building Materials stationery into the top drawer of the office cabinet. As she sorts through the loose-leaf papers that litter her desk, Adriana finds a forgotten propaganda leaflet beneath her blueprint sketches. Adriana rolls her eyes, shaking her head at the image of Nicolae Ceaușescu. He wears a head of state sash across his chest. The emblem for the Republica Socialista Romania scars the three vertical bands of blue, yellow, and red. The emblem depicts a patch of wilderness, the rays of a golden sun cascading over a jagged mountaintop, deciduous trees, and a tumbling river. A lone power tower stands awkwardly amongst the landscape. Ceaușescu clutches a scepter in his hands as children fly kites, spin hula hoops around their waists, and play badminton in a grassy area behind him. The background depicts a thriving industrial community, complete with bridges, factories, highways, forklifts, tower cranes, and ever-growing skyscrapers. He might as well build a wall around his perfect country, Adriana thinks, as she shoves the leaflet into her bottom drawer. She doesn't dare throw it in the garbage. Adriana slams the bottom drawer shut a little too hard, knocking over the pen holder on her desk. Her shaking hands rush to grab the scattering pens. but they roll over the edge of her desk, dispersing across the office floor. Adriana's eyelids flutter shut at the mistake. She places one hand protectively under her swollen belly and recalls her last doctor's appointment. Dr. Ionescu warned Adriana that at 8 months pregnant, stress could still harm the baby's growth. Keeping her eyes shut, she inhales through her nose and exhales through her mouth, as Dr. Ionescu suggested. Adriana envisions the undulating hills of Deva, her childhood home. She breathes the soft smell of the valley flowers, river mosses, and soggy grass. Slowly, the twitching in her foot eases. "Are you okay?" a voice asks. Adriana's eyes flutter open. Her husband, Doran, stands tall in the doorway. His eyes, normally a soft blue, are colored sea green in the gloomy Bucharest weather. Long, ebony tresses frame his high-set cheekbones. Doran's lanky arms are crossed over his broad chest, his hands hidden in the crannies of his armpits. Adriana smiles at Doran's concern. "Just trying to get the baby to relax," Adriana replies, shifting her weight in the office chair. Doran uncrosses his arms, revealing a thick envelope clutched in his hand. His thin lips pull into a devious grin, erasing the wrinkles of worry from his forehead. Adriana sits up in the chair, straightening her back. Her eyes widen and her mouth dries. "This came in the mail this morning," Doran says. "Delia called me in to give it to me." Adriana laughs, tears spilling from her eyes. Doran circles the desk, pulls Adriana out of her chair gently, and wraps his large arms around the small of her back. "What took so long?" Adriana asks. "Did she make you beg for it?" Doran just barely kisses her forehead. "You know, the regular lecture." Doran clears his throat, knocking his voice up several octaves to imitate Delia. "After reviewing your application, we are sending you on this little 3-week vacation. Upon your prompt arrival back home, you will inform your colleagues of how menial France is, how lucky we are in Romania, protected by the mother government and father president who love us, how the communism is the only future, how we are holding the torch of communism, lighting and paving the way not only for Europe, but for the world." Doran exaggerates the imitation, flipping his hair and jutting his hip out. "Shh," Adriana warns, placing one finger over her lips. She looks out through the cracked door, into the hallway. "What if someone hears you?" "Soon, we'll be able to say whatever we want, whenever we want," Doran says. He places the envelope containing his new passport in his briefcase and locks it with a tiny brass key. Doran slips the key into his pocket. "Come," he says to his wife, "let's go home." Sunday, March 27th, 1988. Adriana steadies her hands as she cuts along the bottom seam of Doran's suitcase with utility scissors. She lifts the flap of material up, creating a hidden nook inside the suitcase. Adriana turns to the framed document that she pulled off the wall at work. She hopes no one notices it's missing. Adriana winces as she undoes the backing of the frame and pulls out Doran's diploma. She slips the diploma neatly into the makeshift secret compartment in the suitcase, replaces the flap of material, and pulls a needle and thread back over the seam she just cut across. Adriana feels her baby kicking the insides of her womb, begging her to calm down. "You know, I probably won't use the diploma," Doran tells Adriana. He sits across from her at the kitchen table. "I'll be lucky if they have a labor job for me at the refugee camp." Adriana sighs. "I know," she whispers, "but you might need it anyway." Their plan is relatively simple. The Romanian government has issued Doran a 3-week passport to Paris, but the train Doran will get on tomorrow will go to Vienna in Austria. In Vienna, Doran will declare refugee status and begin the process of applying the visas for himself, Adriana, and the baby to any country that will take them. Adriana and the baby will follow as soon as they can. "Oh no," Adriana suddenly drops the needle. You're leaving tomorrow, and we still haven't decided on a name for the baby, she shouts at Doran. Didn't we decide on Remus Daniel? Doran asks. He smiles, amused at his wife's hysteria. For a boy. But what if it's a girl? Adriana yelps. She'll be born in a month, and you won't be here, and I can't name her alone. Well, we have time now, Doran says reasonably. He rips a fresh leaf of paper from his notepad and lays it on the kitchen table. Doran poises his ballpoint pen over the unmarked sheet. Adriana thinks and then begins to recite. Krina, Christina, Anika. Doran pens down a list of 20 names. Adriana and Doran stare at the list. Now what? Doran asks Adriana. Pick three that you like, and then we'll draw from a bowl, Adriana decides. Simple and effective. Doran scans the list, circling Ioana, Stefania, and Viorica. He rips the names off the paper, folds the papers in half, and places them into a chipped ceramic bowl. Doran reaches into the bowl, pulls out a folded piece of paper, and passes it to Adriana. Adriana unfolds the paper. Stefania. Adriana wrinkles her nose. She reaches into the bowl herself and pulls out a paper. Adriana unfolds it. Ioana. Doran laughs. Why did you do that? Now we have two names. He shakes his head. I wanted Ioana, Adriana explains. Doran leans across the table. Adriana can see her face reflected in his pupils. Then you should have just said so, Doran teases her. He grazes his lips over hers, so Adriana can feel the shape of his words. Because now we have a predicament, Doran continues. Should we use both names? One of them? Adriana shrugs her shoulders. We'll figure it out, she smiles. We always do. Doran's nose squishes Adriana's as he kisses her. Monday, March 28th, 1988. Adriana watches Doran move around inside the train cabin. She runs her fingers over her belly protectively and glances around at the people bustling around the train station. She shivers in the morning sunlight, cold with apprehension. Adriana's best friend, Radhika, drove Adriana and Doran to the train station. Radhika stands next to Adriana, chatting about the latest films and the latest music, but Adriana's mind races out with other thoughts. When will I see Doran next? When will he call me? What if he gets stopped at the border? I shouldn't have risked sewing in his damn diploma. Radhika thinks Doran is staying with friends in Paris. Doran's mother thinks he will be bringing her back a cashmere scarf. Adriana's heart pangs as she realizes even if her father, Remus, was alive, she couldn't have found comfort in him. Adriana couldn't have told him how ecstatically terrified she was of letting Doran go. The government was capable of obtaining information if they wanted it, if they knew where to get it. Adriana and Doran didn't want to risk their loved ones slipping information to the wrong people. Adriana peers down at her belly. She is sure the baby is a girl. The things this baby has heard, Adriana thinks. Thank goodness she can't speak just yet. The baby offers her mother a firm kick, and for the second time, a sudden realization overcomes Adriana. Doran, Adriana calls to her husband through the tiny train window. Doran peers at Adriana through the glass, squinting through the sunlight. We didn't decide on a name for the baby, Adriana almost yells, but then catches Radhika's eye and stops herself. Adriana smiles at Radhika shyly. I just forgot to tell him something. Hold on, Adriana says quickly. Adriana waddles over to the train, extending her neck up to the window. Doran pulls the glass window open. You're not in labor, are you? Doran teases. We didn't decide on the baby's name, Adriana hisses quietly. Doran smiles. Anna, just name her Ioana. You love that name. But you picked Stefania, Adriana insists. I feel like maybe that meant something, somehow. The horn of the train resounds throughout the station. The train heaves suddenly, groaning as its wheels start to roll along the tracks. Oh no, Adriana says softly. You're leaving. Oh no, oh no. Adriana, step back. Don't get hurt, Doran insists. Adriana steps back from the train as Doran pulls away. Dozens of windows rush before Adriana's eyes. Adriana, calls Doran. Adriana stares down the tracks. Doran sticks his head out the train window. He waves his arm at her and yells, just use both, before the train picks up full speed. The train snakes its way down the tracks, leaving the train station, leaving Bucharest, leaving Romania.
That was Republica Socialista Romania, written and read by Sonia Dhaliwal. The second story tonight is Dava.
Dava by Sonia Dhaliwal. July 1969. My grandmother, Surjeet, grips the ceramic counter and pinches her eyelid shut. The contraction runs through her spine with unbelievable force. She glances out the kitchen door into the courtyard. Her three children kick dirt up into giant, dusty clouds. Surjeet watches as Ranbir, her oldest son, throws a stick to their dog, Daisy. Ravneet and Raman chase each other and giggle incessantly. Ravneet, Surjeet calls to her oldest daughter, run and fetch the midwife. The baby is coming. The baby is coming. The baby is coming, Ravneet screeches. Raman joins her older sister in the chant. The baby is coming, the baby is coming, the girls sing as they dash off through the tiny dirt roads of Basia, a tiny village in Punjab, India. Surjeet calls her son in from the dusty courtyard. Her lower lip trembles as she lights the gas stove. Surjeet pours milk into a steel pot and places it down onto the wrought iron coils. She throws in an extra spoon of sugar for her son. Surjeet clears the children's notebooks and pencils off the kitchen table, tenderly smoothing out Rambir's crinkled exam scores. She beams at the paper. Ranbir scored the highest grade on the high school entrance exam in the entire village. Surjeet is confident that he will attend the most prestigious medical school in Punjab after high school. Ranbir strolls into the kitchen, tracking dirt all over the marble floor. He sits down at the kitchen table. Ranbir smiles at his mother, his crossbite disturbing the symmetry of his face. Surjeet sets a warm glass of milk down in front of Ranbir. She smooths the sweaty hairs off Ranbir's forehead and kisses him gently. December 1980. It's 7 a.m. Ranbir's shift at the factory in Rexdale is finally done. He clocks out and heads for the bus stop. Ranbir shivers as he waits for the bus. He wasn't prepared for the Canadian winter. Ranbir rubs his hands together, wishing he had gloves. He cups his hand around his mouth and breathes hot air to warm his palms. Ranbir pulls a letter out of his pocket. It's from Polly, his best friend from home. Wish she would just come home, it reads. It's rough here without you to help me study. Ranbir chuckles to himself despite the bitter weather. Ranbir aches to be in medical school with Polly right now. But when he heard of how easy it was to get a high-paying job in Canada, he couldn't pass up the opportunity. He had to do what was best for Ravneet and Raman. When Ranbir gets home, he pulls a blank sheet of paper out of his desk and writes to Polly. Do me a favor, Ranbir writes. When you get home for Diwali, visit the Sutlej River for me. Missing Mummy, Papa, and Ramneek. August 1990. Ranbir plants an oak tree in the front lawn. Ranbir drives limos for the airport 6 days a week, but today is his day off. The tree is a surprise for his wife, Deepika. Ranbir's mind wanders to the medical school applications that are currently covered by a pile of bills on his desk. He's called all the medical schools he's heard of, but none of them offer him scholarships. I'm his one-month-year-old daughter. I nap on a blanket close by. Dad packs the last of the dirt around the little sapling and sets the shovel down with a dull thud. He settles down on the grass and watches the rise and fall of my belly as I breathe the summer air. September 1990. Dad leans against his limo in the parking lot. The other guys crack peanuts with their teeth, spitting the shells across the tarmac. "Hey, Ranbir, you're a smart guy, right?" one of the older uncles asks him. Dad shrugs his shoulders. "I have a buddy who sent his kid to pharmacy school in Ohio. Complete fuck-up, but the states took him. They need those pharmacy-schmarmacy people right now. And get this, they actually gave him money to go there. What the hell, huh?" September 1997. Mom and Dad sip hot milk from ceramic mugs at the kitchen table. The dull light from the stove barely illuminates the room. Dad clutches an application for medical school. "We'll make it work, Ranbir," Mom whispers to Dad. "What about the pharmacy?" Dad wonders out loud. "I can cover some shifts with a drifting pharmacist," Mom replies. "And the kids?" Mom sips her milk silently for a moment. Mom and Dad talk until the digital clock on the stove reads 6 a.m. Mom eventually uses the back of the application to pen down a grocery list. October 1998. I rock my legs back and forth underneath my desk. I practice writing in cursive. I scribble my name down over and over again, focusing on curving the S's and the D's just right. When I finish, I leap from my chair and snatch my paper off my desk. I run to Miss Chambers' desk to show her. "I'm finished," I shout. I show Miss Chambers the page covered with rows of Sonia Surjeet Dhaliwal, repeated over and over again. March 1999. My family attends my aunt and uncle's 25th anniversary party. I chase my cousin Arvi through the crowd of adults. I dash past my dad. He swirls the scotch he clutches in his hand as he chats with some uncles I don't know. "Sonia," he calls to me, "come back." I run back over to Dad. He places one hand delicately on my shoulder and beams down at me. "Tell these nice uncles what you want to be when you grow up." I smile sweetly, revealing the gaps where my two front teeth have fallen out. "I'm going to be a doctor. When people are sick, I'm going to give them dawa. I'm going to make them all better." September 2011. My heart quickens as I make my decision. I'm going to look at my MCAT score. I lean back in my chair and my eye twitches slightly. While still reclined in my chair, I extend my arm forward, pulling my laptop open. I close it shut again, feeling lunch curdling in my throat. I yank open my laptop and try to swallow, but my throat feels coarse. Pressure pushes down on my chest, suffocating my breath. I mechanically type in my username and password. My AAMC homepage appears on the screen. The results tab stands alone in my focus as the rest of the page blurs. I hover the pointer over the tab. My index finger quakes as I click the tab. 24R. I pick at the study schedule I had taped onto my desk. My eye twitches. "Sonia, you've been up there for a while," Mom calls up to me from downstairs. "Come down." I kick my chair back and drag my feet through my bedroom. Panic crescendos in my chest. I stall on each step as I descend the staircase. Mom stands at the doorway of the kitchen. She nervously tugs at the hem of her worn cotton shirt. "Did you look?" she asks casually. I nod. The muscles at the side of my eyes start to tug. Mom rubs the small of my back and feigns an encouraging smile. "I'll put a tea in for you," she suggests. Dad watches television in the living room. As Mom fumbles with the tea things, I sink into a kitchen chair and stare at the back of Dad's head. He lounges on the couch in the living room, his head propped on a corduroy pillow. Dad is engrossed in Anderson Cooper's program. I think of a clever way to tell Dad he has a talentless fuck-up for a daughter. I inch over to my dad. I sit at the foot of the couch and cough a little bit. "So, I looked at my score," I announce. Dad stares blankly at the television. I shake his foot gently. It's swollen from standing on his feet all day. "I didn't do so well," I warn him. "Well, what is it?" he asks, his eyes on Anderson. 24R. I look down at my hands. I don't want Dad to see how defeated I am. He's silent for a moment. Then the moment trails on, and I realize he isn't going to say anything. He says nothing at all.
That was Dava, written and read by Sonia Dhaliwal. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1206. I recorded Sonia Dhaliwal reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle returns next Sunday night with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.